Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 11 a.m. on June 3rd. With us today, we have Representative Tilton, Speaker Chenault, Representative Keto, Representative Josephson, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a forum to conduct business. The only item on the calendar is House Bill 4002 again. Today we're just trying to fill out the gaps in the information that we have, and I think we'll start with Kate Sheehan first, Director of Personnel.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Kate Sheehan. I'm the Director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. I've asked Michelle Mashaw to join me as well in case there are some questions.
Yeah, please, I'm asked too. So. Yeah, we can probably put Mint up there. We'll probably get one more chair in there with that. I will be joined by Representative Ledoux, and it looks like Representative Culver. So we almost have a full committee. Thank you for joining us today. I'm please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Kate Sheehan. I'm Director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations.
Michelle Mashad, Chief Health Official for Division of Retirement and Benefits.
What we're looking for today is, Conrad, talk to you.
Mr. Chair, no, but I have talked to Minta. I have a general idea, but it might be quite better if I answer the questions than prepare a statement. Just so I'm clear on what you're looking for.
We're looking for all the information we can get. So I believe you were probably involved in the drafting of the bill.
No, I was not.
Who was?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. It was primarily the Department of Law that did the drafting. I was involved as well.
Were there anything? You probably explored a number of items. Were there other directions that you went in originally before you went down this one?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. We were actually, due to the time constraints given, we were trying to find a way that we could, a bill that we could put forward in a short period of time, and so we were rather limited on the different options that we pursued. So this was primarily through the pension plan because that's what had been previously submitted.
We've asked Larry Ringheider to get into the database of National Association of Insurance Commissioners and get us a summary of what the 13 other states have done, what direction they've gone in. Quite frankly, we've been the only committee that's heard this bill that repeatedly. There's reason for it. There are a lot of people that are still concerned about the fiscal note and what the ultimate cost would be. And so we would look at as many things as we can in a limited amount of time that might offer basically the same protection, but not have the among other things, the unfunded liability issues like that. So if it looks like we're using a shotgun right now, we are. We have a number of people that are going to be testifying next week as well. And but any direction you could give us of things that have been looked at, maybe not accepted for one reason or another, or without going into the those accounts. Would be helpful. But it looks like we're striking out. Any thoughts?
Mr. Chair, certainly if you can see, we responded, or the Department of Administration responded to questions September 14th. You can see that we have bargained some additional benefits into the collective bargaining agreements. They, for the most part, are consistent among all of our 11 collective bargaining agreements. You can see some inconsistencies. And they, for the most part, include a life insurance and a travel accident insurance. That was recently increased back in 2013 and 2014.
And that's one of the reasons we invited two of our unions to testify, because we're going to rely on them too. I mean, they've got a vested interest in this as much as all of us in the room do. I believe one of the things you're talking about is taking the life insurance up. I think it was $48,000 that was capped. Is that
Mr. Chair, that is correct. It was $48,000 at the time that the troopers had lost their lives in 2013 and 14. However, we do now have options that go up to $300,000.
Excellent. And that's the direction that we were looking at as well. And then ultimately we have to figure out how it's addressed. But I think we're still going to do $48,000, if I'm not mistaken, in the for the legislative employees. But
actually, Mr. Chair, I believe that $300,000 has been increased for state employees through the voluntary benefit program, so you would also be able to elect up to $300,000 now.
That would make the day of everybody at the table. I don't think any of us have had a contract or have gone through the open enrollment. Will this be the first time?
It was in the open enrollment of 2015 that it was first offered?
Mm.
Yes.
Representative Chenault.
And Ms. Chairman, I wish I was more than an alternate on your committee sometimes, because there are things that interest me, the $300,000. Was that elective or is that mandatory?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Speaker Chenault, it is an elective, a voluntary benefit, so the member has that option to purchase it during an open enrollment or when they're first employed.
Okay. And Ms. Chairman, if I may, I see on the SU and on CEA, I mean, I'm looking at the list of different options available, whether it's travel insurance or travel and accident insurance. Are those negotiated into the contract and as part of the contract, or those just options that some of those members would elect to take, or are they mandated in the contract?
Through the chair, Speaker Chenault, these are negotiated. They're in the agreement. You don't have to elect them. They're paid automatically.
Okay. And does that, and forgive me, but is that travel or accident insurance, is that travel anytime they travel on state business, or would that be paid if something happened to them while going on vacation or a daily commute to take your kids to school or something?
Through the chair, Speaker Chenault, that is while they're in travel status for the state, so as a travel status as an employee.
Okay, and that would be on top of if something happened to an airline carrier, or that would be on top of any settlement that might come from that type of an accident.
Through the chair, Speaker Chenault, yes, that's correct.
I believe it was an airline. They would reimburse workers' compensation on that, but I don't believe they reimburse the travel accident. But we'll have people that can answer that, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it works. But we'll have the Department of Labor and Larry Wenghire from the Division of Insurance to explain how all the pieces theoretically. We're in a perfect world, I guess, hopefully. I think also that Jake is going to be able to go into more detail on that when Jake comes up. But Rep. St. Johnson.
Thank you, Dr. Chair. Just summarize what I think I heard. The life insurance and travel accident insurance was $48,000, at least for some of the bargaining units. It was increased in 2013 and 14 to $300,000. But it's elective or voluntary, and so an employee has to pay some premium or something that is deducted from salary. Is that, have I summarized this?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there are two different types of life insurance. There's the one that is covered by the employer, which is the basic, mm-hmm. and then the employee does have the option under that plan to elect up to their annual salary, which is capped at $60,000 for most bargaining units. It goes up to $100,000 for supervisory and confidential. And that's where also the travel accident is an employer-funded that's negotiated through the collective bargaining. There's also voluntary benefits, which are a cafeteria style that are done with the open enrollment in the fall, and that's where the member can elect any of those coverages, and they pay the premium as a pre-tax contribution.
And that's the component that would get them as much as $300,000, or their dependents.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that's correct.
All right.
Representative Kito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess for clarification, that nowhere in the bargaining agreements do we have any benefits for health care premiums, is that correct, as a survivor benefit? So that's this bill taking care of that issue.
Through the chair, Representative Kito, that is correct.
Thank you.
And I think Representative Kito just touched on a concern of a number of us, and that's that there is coverage for children, even if there's no surviving spouse. And can you walk us through how that currently works?
So, Mr. Chair, currently in the retirement systems, if the member dies in occupational death and there is no surviving spouse, then the dependent child is not entitled to the medical benefits. Does that answer the question?
Sorry. Yeah, it was not the answer I was hoping to hear, but that's one more thing we're going to have to address, I think. Representative Kito, followed by Representative Josephson.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, there may be other ways, and I think we did get an answer, but we didn't really have a comment from the Department of Health and Social Services about what would happen. So whether those children become wards of a foster parent or the state or another relative, then the insurance that they would be eligible under those guardianships would apply to those children.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Through the chair, I guess I'm curious about I recall an open enrollment looking at the elective component. Someone who works in an office like we do may feel that that's more than is required for the type of work. I guess my first question is, does it cover someone working in an office, which hopefully and generally is a safe place? There could be debate about that. And even if they were to die in a sort of a natural, through natural causes, but they were on the clock working.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the voluntary benefits, there are some limits to what it wouldn't cover, such as a suicide, but for the most part, yes, it is a, in the event of death, it is a payable benefit if it was elected and the premiums were paid.
Through the chair, for the more tenuous work where there are great vulnerabilities to the worker, I'm curious about what percent apply for the elective or voluntary benefit and whether they are encouraged to do that in some way. It strikes me that they should be. And I assume that these are smart individuals and they know that, but I'd like to hear some discussion of that.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I don't know what percentage of people elect the coverage. The open enrollment materials are not necessarily geared towards one job class or another, so we don't necessarily have any additional emphasis on the high-risk categories to elect a voluntary benefit.
Could we get the numbers, whatever numbers you can pull together, and possibly get them to Conrad by Monday? Good thing to do.
Yep. Just to follow up, and
certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm familiar with the disability status, but in the case of a trooper who tragically were to lose his or her life, if they didn't apply for the elective benefit, they would receive, their dependents would receive a mandatory automatic benefit, apparently of $60,000 to $100,000. And what other benefits? And of course, we're talking here in HB 66 and this 4,000 version about this question, but what other benefits would dependents receive if they were not in retirement status? Is that all they would receive?
So through the chair, Representative Josephson, if they did not elect any of the optional or voluntary benefits, then it would be the collectively bargained basic and travel and accident insurance that would be paid out, as well as whatever unpaid leave or that they had on the books, and then whatever occupational death benefit that they may be entitled to.
Representative Colbert.
Yeah, more of an answer to this. What would be the payout through the workers' comp pool on occupational injury, following up on Representative Josephson's question?
Through the chair, Representative Colbert, I don't know the answer to that, but we can find out.
I thought the chair might, though.
I think it's 70%, but Larry Wenheyer is going to be done on Monday, but I think it's 70%. And I believe that only applies if there is a spouse and children. If there is anybody else, I don't believe there is workers' comp coverage. And I think Representative Josephson looked at that a couple of years ago, didn't you?
I did, and the whole body amount was $177,000. I think it still is. Is that a number you're familiar with?
That would apply.
It might be wise for us to hear from the workers' comp division.
We've got everybody coming.
How long are we going to be on this train?
Until we get it done right. I would anticipate 3-4 month meetings. To board to get the information, not counting the public testimony, and then a couple to hammer out whatever makes most sense.
And then the finance.
Yeah. Representative Levin?
So when you say to get it done right, are you thinking about a bill which just encompasses the peace officers, or are you thinking about... Are you thinking about a universal coverage bill?
That's a very good question. I think we're going to be looking at all of it. And we've been gathering information along those lines. I don't know if Conrad's got it out yet, but we got more information on death histories on the table. Yeah. Came in yesterday, I believe.
So, actually, I'm not sure who I should ask this question to, but it appears like there are maybe more DOT deaths than state trooper deaths. But I guess what I would be curious about is the percentage. Are there more DOT employees rather than there are troopers?
That's above my pay grade. We'll find somebody that can do it, but good question.
Mr. Chair, I can answer though. There are more DOT employees. There's over 3,000 DOT employees. I don't know the exact number of troopers right now, maybe in the 300 range.
So just follow up. So the percentages of troopers who are lost in the line of duty is probably far greater than the percentage of DOT people lost in the line of duty. Do you think that would be correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, I would say that the percentages are either going to be the same or probably greater for the troopers. I don't know the percentages, but we could find that out.
I would appreciate that, because it would seem to me just, you know, gut reaction that being a trooper would be a far more dangerous job than being a DOT employee.
Actually, the first round, when we did the first review of the deaths, it was touched, I think, eight different agencies. And surprisingly, Admin had 3 fatalities. And again, helicopter and fixed-wing aircraft crashes were by far the top of the list of the cause of death. And that was across the board, fish and game. I think DOT had one. Public safety had, I think, 4 or 5. But we had one guy who had a piece of equipment fall on his head, a DOT person, another one that died in an avalanche. Representative Colbert.
I just know how creative you and Conrad are. When we took care of the CHEO, we used some of the funding off of the insurance levy that people pay when they up their policies, or have we thought about creating a pool of designated DGF fund that would then go into paying these kind of benefits? Right. A pool approach, just like we are subsidizing individual health care policies in Alaska through the recently adopted legislation by the House. An approach like that where we create a fund that would then pay health insurance policies. We could also perhaps look at bigger life insurance pool or rate higher limits perhaps for more risky occupations, and pay that through a pool to then provide that sum of money to take care of these, just narrowing the scope of who would be eligible to be paid out of the pool. Is that an approach that you've thought about, or I know that...
We've looked at, and you hit on something, which is the more people that we get into a program like that, voluntarily, the premiums typically go down. If we could get most state employees into it, for example, it would drop significantly. The insurance company, for lack of a better word, calls it a lot of big numbers. If you have a lot of big numbers, it typically brings the premiums down. But that's one thing that's been being looked at.
As a part of a benefit package, I mean, perhaps across the board, a benefit package that then, you know, with whatever payroll tax deductions and the like, bargain with our bargaining groups and our unorganized groups. I'm just hypothetically, I'm just thinking aloud, creating a funding source to go to a pool, and then that pool designated DGF funding to take care of these specific needs.
Now you're seeing why it's taken so long to do anything. And we actually saw the first actuarial report about a month ago, and that was the one from last year. And then we saw the new one came in 2 weeks later, roughly. We had nothing to really work with. We didn't have a fiscal note. There was a fiscal note apparently floating around, but it was never submitted to the committee. So, in effect, we have a period of almost a year when we were unable to do much.
So we have the fiscal year started, and all programs generally run on fiscal year. So if we had something done by the fiscal year, and if we had bargaining agreements out, and the bargaining units agreed with this, they could do a memorandum of agreement to change their language in their contract, to agree to, let's just say, some vehicle that was created to fund this purpose. The other employees, you know, we'd have to give them an opportunity to testify on whatever vehicle we, you know, perhaps came up with, and the unorganized groups. But if our date was fiscal year starting July 1, and we created something like this, we could get something in place.
Except for the two things that are driving probably, I don't want to say more important. Factor, but it would be the open enrollment on the benefits plan, and then also the if it's a year when we check. How often do you guys negotiate? Every 2 years?
Every 3 years.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't thinking about the elective, you know, the renewal of your open season to up your benefits. You can create a whole new life insurance package too. That's so. State workers killed in the line of duty. Let's just say we had a 2 cent an hour levy that went into paying for these life insurance policies that then took care of all these families, that they would receive. They wouldn't be paying an elective for that benefit, but we would go out and acquire life insurance policies that would cover on the job injuries, as long as we didn't, you know, get wrapped up in action with the workers' comp and how that's.
Yeah, we probably ought to save this for committee discussion, and we've still got two people that haven't testified yet.
Well, I'd like to see some Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C approaches so we can get this done, because I don't think that state employees would have any problem creating some kind of a security system for if you're looking at doing all, if we're looking at doing just narrow peace officers, but if it's your intent to do, that you want to be broader than that, we could reach out to people and see what they thought about creating a pool, and that pool could also fund health policies as well. That's the new source of cash.
I think it's my intent to do as much as we can with the money that's available. And Driving Voices is ultimately going to be that, not because of this committee, but because of the two finance committees. Rep. St. Joseph?
Yes, just if I may, just under discussion.
Sure.
I would be interested in perhaps even a working group where we look at a thorough consideration of all of these issues. I'm a little concerned because the call, and of course we can amend bills, but the call is restricted to a specific set of circumstances. We have a fiscal note that I think is very reasonable, and I'm just worried that we're going to get distracted from the narrower task. Albeit there is a broader one, but I it's certainly something I'd be happy to entertain in the second half of the year, during the interim.
Let's put it down here in the second half of the year.
Well, I'm hoping to be at home for Christmas. but I've heard the such talk.
No, I think we'll be examining as much as we can, but I think it'll be laid out in options. Can we do this? Is there any demand for this? But obviously, the administration is going to be involved at some point in time. We've had discussions with a number of people within the administration already. They have some ideas too. But we do.
Yeah, so since we seem to be getting into discussion on this, it would be my preference. I think we've got a simple bill that takes care of a specific group of people with a very, very small fiscal note. Is it perfect? Probably not. Is anything perfect in what we do? Probably not. It would be my suggestion that we just deal with this bill and the group of people who are included in this bill according to the governor's call. And then as Representative Josephson suggested, if whether we're here or in back home or a combination of being in special session back home or being special session here, we can continue to work on this and look at this for next session. But we don't have to try to do everything now, because if we try to do the entire ball of wax, it becomes a really complex problem. If we just do this one narrow group, it's like really simple. And I guess I prefer the simple to the complex.
I guess my answer to that is we'd be kicking the can. At some point, at the time, we're going to have to address this. And if we have the time right now, which...
We don't have to address everything in a single bill.
Let's go back to the people that we have signed up to testify. Come on up, Jerry. I'm sure you're trying to be in Tibet. Thanks, ladies. Please read yourself onto the records, then fire away. Not literally, but...
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jake Midcalf, and I'm the Executive Director for the Public Safety Employees Association, Local 803. I'm with Sean Kazakin, who is a Vice President of my association, and he's also a state trooper located here in Juneau. Mr. Speaker, I have a prepared statement, and then I'm available for questions, and I think Sean is available as well. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 4002. I want to address what this bill is and does from our perspective. I agree with Representative Ludlow that this is a simple piece of legislation. It provides major medical insurance for survivors, which includes spouses and children of peace officers and firefighters killed in the line of duty. It is limited to peace officers and firefighters because these employees, unlike any other of your employees or local government employees, have to go into dangerous and hazardous situations. Other employees don't have to do that. They can actually say, no, I don't want to do that job because it's a risk to my health or my safety. Police and firefighters and peace officers don't get to make that distinction. We would support something that included everybody, but there is a distinction with police, peace officers, and firefighters for the work that they do because it's unique. Under House Bill 4002, the beneficiaries of this legislation only receive the benefit if their spouse or parent dies in the line of duty. So it limits it that way as well. 14 other states in the United States provide this benefit to police officers and firefighters. The U.S. military provides it to their officers killed in the line of duty. In fact, the benefit that the U.S. military provides through TRICARE is 3 years of full medical insurance, and after 3 years, it's major medical insurance to the survivors and spouses of officers killed in the line of duty. So it's not a new benefit. And HB 4002 has overwhelming support statewide from people of all political persuasions. I just note that Governor Parnell has written on this. Paul Jenkins has written on it. Dermot Cole has written on it. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner has written on it in support of this legislation. I think Governor Parnell, in particular, as a former chair of the Senate Finance Committee and as a former governor, has unique insight into this issue. I agree with Governor Parnell. He said that there should be a zero fiscal note on this bill because the benefit is already being provided to the three families that are at issue here. And it should be indeterminate after that because we don't know how often this benefit will be used. We hope that it is never used because we don't want to see anybody in this situation. I also want to address what HB 4002 doesn't do. This isn't an equal protection problem. As I previously stated, 14 other states provide this benefit. None of those states have been sued for providing that benefit. Your own counsel, Mr. Wayne, the other day we heard testimony from the state's counsel, and our research indicates that this is a legally justified benefit because of the unique work that police officers, and firefighters do. And I've talked about the cost. This really, we see it as no fiscal note because of the benefit already being provided to the families. One other thing I will say in conclusion is, we're not talking about travel insurance. We're not talking about life insurance. This is a benefit in this bill that would provide major medical coverage to the spouse and to the survivors of a peace officer, firefighter, or police officer killed in the line of duty. So it's a very limited situation that we hope never happens. I would urge you to pass this simple bill. There are all sorts of contingencies that you can talk about, but the issue here is that we have a situation in Alaska where police officers, and firefighters, if they're killed in the line of duty, their families don't have any kind of medical insurance. And for the work that they do, and for the public protection, and for the situation that we put those people in, that's a needed benefit that the state should provide. And I'm open to any questions. I appreciate the time to testify.
What do you currently provide under your current contract?
For what kind of benefit are you talking about? Medical?
No, travel and life insurance. Are you guys up to $250 or $300 optional?
What I recall from the last negotiations that we had, there was a life insurance benefit of $200,000. It increased from a prior contract to this contract that's in place now from $100,000 to $200,000. That said, none of the families that are the Toll family, the Gabe Rich family, or the Brandy Johnson family, or Scott Johnson family, they got the $100,000 benefit because they died before the new contract went into effect.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at. Lips and smell.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, if I can, and that is negotiated, and Jake, that is negotiated into the current contract. Or is that a supplemental? Do the employees have to pay any part of that $200,000 life insurance?
For that life insurance, no. And you know, I can give you the sort of history on that. The states came into those negotiations and said we're going to increase the life insurance from $100,000 to $200,000, and we didn't object to that. And so, you know, I appreciate that the state did that. It just came too late for the families that were affected.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just, you know, just trying to, you stated earlier that 14 other states have provided this type of health care coverage for dependents of the slain officer. And I look around this room and I don't see anybody that doesn't think that we should do that. I think that we should provide it. In those 14 states, and I haven't researched it, so I don't know, but was legislation passed to do that? Was that negotiated into contracts, or do you have any kind of breakout on the how this became effective in the other states?
I don't have all the information in front of me, Mr. Speaker. I can provide you that. We have an analysis done of those 14 states and what they're offered. I think I provided that to Representative Millett's office last year or this past summer, but there's a variation. All of it is by statute. I looked at costs because cost was always an issue in this process. I know Michigan has that benefit. They passed it with zero fiscal note. They have, I think, about 10 times the number of public safety, police, and fire people that are covered than Alaska does. Minnesota offers a benefit like this. Same thing, there was no cost. It was passed by statute. I think the most recent state that has passed this benefit is Utah. They passed it in 2015. Again, I don't recall there being a fiscal note, and if there was, it was indeterminate in that state. So, and I'm happy to provide you that list of research on those 14 states and what they offer.
If you could get that to Conrad, we'll get out to the members and post it on the website as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Rep. Zanfido.
Thank you. Question for Mr. Metcalf. I think it's more follow-up on what I had asked back in our previous meeting of the department, and it seemed to me as though we've got two different things we're looking at. The bill actually covers all police, firefighter, and police officers in the state of Alaska that are covered under PERS. Contract negotiations would necessarily only cover those employees that are in that negotiation, so within the state bargaining units for the troopers or within a municipal bargaining unit for the police officers. And this is a guarantee that if you're working in the PERS system through for the states, or either at a municipal or a state level, that you would receive a health benefit, so it doesn't have to be negotiated unit by unit. So I think this kind of helps cover all of those circumstances except for the VPSOs, which we acknowledged was a unique case last meeting. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Kito, I agree with that. One thing I'd like to point out is we represent municipal police departments around the state as well as the state police state police officers, but there are a number of municipalities that are not represented by collective bargaining. Marcel Pearl is one example. There are some of the smaller police departments around the state that aren't in a collective bargaining situation, so they don't have anybody that can go in and bargain that for them. So one of the benefits of this is that anybody in the PERS system would get the benefit.
Thank you.
Jake, is the city of QMIM come under you?
No, they don't. They're not they don't have a collective bargaining agreement as far as I know.
But then we had a fatality several Christmases ago, and the city jumped in and took care of it.
I don't think I was in this job when that unfortunate accident or death happened. I shouldn't say accident. My understanding is that they took care of them. But you know, the problem is the situations where that wouldn't be possible or that might not happen, and we hope that this bill would take care of that and allow families not to have to worry about what they do after their spouse or loved one dies in the line of duty.
Any further questions? Well, I've been told that we actually have Brad Wilson online, don't we?
Sir?
My mistake.
Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Thanks again. And we'll get them up next week. The other concern, yes, is we've got a little bit of time, is what do we do about VPSOs? Yeah, they're in a unique category. In fact, Jake can probably help me on this. How many of them go through the academy? Do they all go through it, or?
Thank you. My name is Sean Kazakin. I'm vice president of the trooper chapter of the Public Safety Employees Association, and I can tell you what I know about it. DPS really would probably be the one you could have in here to answer that, but they're not state employees. However, they do come to our academy, and we do train them. But they belong to their regional corporations, and that's who employs them.
And I may add that we heard a couple of days ago that some of them are covered by PERS. I believe Bill.
I couldn't answer that. That would probably be a better question for the Department of Public Safety.
That came off of their former mayor, who was not one of us. So I would assume that's pretty accurate. But since he's not here, I guess we can't.
But I can tell you that they're not certified by the Alaska Police Standards Council, like all other peace officers are. So they do not have a badge, and they do have vehicles in place for some of them to be armed. But you know, that's all through their corporations.
I think I can clarify a little bit from my own experience working up there. Point Hope, for example, which is a fairly large village, has its own highly skilled police force that works for the North Slope Borough. Those would be PERS employees. It was the only village in the borough, in the North Slope Borough, that I covered as a prosecutor. I don't think there, my sense is there aren't DPSOs up there, but I could be wrong. Partly because they just have the revenue to have a sophisticated police force. In the Nana region, other than Kotzebue, there were no there were troopers, Kotzebue police, and VPSOs. So I don't know. I made an issue of the VPSO category, and I'm more convinced, having looked into this, that it falls under this greater rubric that needs to be considered, I think, during the interim, and that shouldn't distract us from moving the bill. But just wanted to comment on it.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, because while VPSOs wouldn't be eligible for benefits under this bill, there are, in my mind, so many problems with the VPSO program, not in the practice of the program, but in treating them like they're not state employees, after they're going to our academies, after they're wearing our badges, and then kind of wink, wink, well, they're actually employed by the native corporations. I think we're going to get tagged on that one of these days.
I would disagree with that. I don't think anybody would. That is something that has to be addressed ultimately.
But does it need to be addressed in the context of this bill? I don't think so.
Brad Wilson, are you with us?
No.
Oh, there. Brad, this is Kurt Olson. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
I'm sorry, I'm here. Yes, this is Brad Wilson, business manager of Alaska Correctional Officers Association.
Thank you for calling in today. Were you able to listen to most of the dialogue today?
I wasn't, I'm sorry. I got an email. I thought it was tomorrow, so I have not heard the testimony. I just got noticed, and I called in as soon as I got the notice. So.
Well, I'm guessing you probably have a prepared statement then. Or do you?
I don't have really a prepared statement. I certainly was just calling in to certainly say that on behalf of all correction officers, we appreciate you taking up this bill. Obviously, it's a very important bill. You know, obviously, with all peace officers, you know, we have to, from time to time, deal with combative individuals. Correction officers probably certainly have their share, especially at intake centers. So, you know, and I just wanted to say that, you know, that's with the troopers, that's with police, that's with any law enforcement. You know, when they have a dangerous situation, or in our case, you know, usually dealing with a combative individual who's coming in the back door, you don't have a chance to just say, ah, boy, that guy's really big and strong. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want my family to be without me. You know, you gotta get in there. You gotta do it to protect both the individual and the other officers that are there. So certainly, you know, this bill is, you know, very important. It's nice to know that if the worst happens, which we don't want to have happen, but obviously it has, that your family's protected and that they have the insurance that they need. So that's basically, I just wanted to, you know, throw that in there for you guys' consideration.
Brad, I've got a question that we've asked other people, and that's the benefits that you have in your collective bargaining process. What do you have in the way of the accidental death? Are you guys up to $200,000?
Yeah, we're pretty much consistent with the rest of the individuals in the state of Alaska dealing with the death benefits.
So you're pretty much in line with Jake then?
I believe so, sir, yes.
Okay, any questions for Brad on the line? I got one for you, but it's not related to this. I did a bloodborne pathogen bill on behalf of Wildwood several years ago, and I was told that we would be sued over and over again on that. Have your people had any problems when they've taken blood involuntarily, when they've been slimed?
I have not heard of any issues with that whatsoever. There's been little tiny deals, not in any of that vein, you know, where people are here asking to do it and so on, but no, we haven't heard any issues with that whatsoever, and certainly I cannot begin to tell you how much we appreciated that bill, all correction officers, and
that was a long time coming. We were told over and over again that we were going to get sued, and we never did. But,
yeah, I haven't heard a single word of that.
Well, thanks again. Good talking to you.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the testimony.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, sir.
We can do two things. We can gavel out right now, or we can gavel out right now. Any further committee comments?
Yeah. Are we on tomorrow for public testimony?
Yeah. Up to 2 hours, but we're using the finance version of the wording on the signing up, and we won't be sitting around for a half hour if there's nobody dialing in. So I'm guessing that we'll probably have 10 people calling. Brad, have you guys mobilized? Are we going to have a lot of calls tomorrow? Yeah, on the record, the most effective way to do it is email or a letter, because it becomes part of the permanent record. What we did this time is we backed addresses off of the ones that had addresses, and we take telephone numbers off as well. We did it as if it was somebody who's applying for a board and commission where they have their name basically, and that's it, but no personal information. But speaking strictly for myself, it carries a lot more weight when we have a personal letter than somebody that only has 2 minutes to testify and may not have testified before. But it becomes part of the permanent record that way, and but whatever works for you guys. Okay. We'll be here those 2 hours. So.
Thank you.
And with that, we will adjourn at 11:56.